everyone. Welcome to another edition of Lifestyles here on WWDD, 860 on the AM dial. I am Dee Lynam, your host for the next 30 minutes. 30 minutes that are sponsored by American Advertising Services, Philadelphia's longest established advertising and publicity firm. For creative ideas that can help your company, give Joe Ball a call at 484-562-0063. That number again, 484-562-0063. We welcome to today's show Nikki Wisenzee-Egan, author, journalist, all of the above. I guess we'll start with Chasing Cosby, just because it's the most recent and because of what's in the news right now, it becomes quite pertinent. But how long did it take you to write Chasing Cosby, and did you start like in 2005 when you were on to what was happening, maybe before anybody else?
Yeah, I was. I only had 2 months to write this book. I wrote it last summer, but I have been on the Bill Cosby case for 14 years. I started on it the first day it broke in January 2005 when I was with the Philadelphia Daily News. And I broke a lot of stories back then. There were 13 other accusers. I got the first interview with Tamara Green, a second accuser who came forward, another one with one of the Jane Does. But back then, like, the media, nobody wanted to hear it, including the media. And so I was really put through the ringer by the media, by Cosby's people, by his attorneys, by everyone.
Did your paper have your back?
My paper had my back. They were amazing. And I to this day, I don't think any other paper in the country would have stood behind me like that paper did.
When you were on that beat at that moment, did you have in your head, oh, one day I'll write a book about this whole experience? Or at some point along those 14 years, did you say to yourself, I definitely have a book in here?
Well, when I first started covering it, I was a Cosby fan. So my initial reaction was not the cause. I was horrified. I thought he was Cliff Huxtable. You know, as I write about on the book, there were a lot of emotional connections I had to the things he had been through. But then I had to put my personal feelings aside and dig into who this woman was that was accusing him, and was she in a position to know him, and so forth, because her name wasn't being released. And through my sources at Temple University, I found out a lot about her and her name, although we didn't reveal it until we had permission a couple months later, and saw how credible she was. I mean, she'd had an incredible history. She was one of the top basketball players of high school in Canada, and she had been recruited by 50 to 60 colleges in the U.S. and chose the University of Arizona. And Cosby had, you know, taken her on as done a mentoring role that he pursued with her. She did not pursue it, which fits the pattern of so many of these other cases. So that was it. But, you know, what I didn't expect, I thought it's a big story, but who knows what's going to happen with it. But then the second accuser came to me, Tamara Green, and gave me an exclusive interview. And it was at that point I thought, wow, you know, if there's this another one that takes this to a whole different level. But what I wasn't prepared for was the way the rest of the media backed off the story and the way I was attacked by the media for the story. I was prepared to be hassled and harassed by Cosby's people. It's what happens when you do investigative journalism. But what I wasn't prepared was for the media to react the way it did. And it's been interesting. I thought there would be the reaction that, you know, there's been for the Jeffrey Epstein reporter this week, where everybody's like, wow, look, she got all these stories. No. No, it was the exact opposite. And it was probably another 13 years before there was any other acknowledgement from the rest of the media about what I had done. But part of that was because I was already at People when the scandal rebroke in 2014, and I hadn't had media training yet, so they were getting a lot of requests for interviews for me that they wouldn't let me take.
So, when you talk about being an investigative reporter before that with the Daily News, was there anything you had covered that even remotely prepared you for the magnitude of what you encountered with Cosby?
Well, there were two things. You know, I had also gotten a master's in criminal justice at Temple University, and I had covered, I'd done an expose on a series of drug-facilitated sexual assaults that were happening at the clubs on Delaware Avenue. So that, and I remember I was horrified at the time, because while I knew a lot of this had made news in the 90s, I'd never seen anything about it. And, you know, not long before, I'd been one of those girls on Delaware Avenue at the bars dancing the night away, not thinking about someone slipping a drug in my drink. So I learned a lot about the crime then and was really horrified, because it was premeditated rape, in my view. The drugs that are commonly used are out of your system within 4 to 12 hours. So even if you get wake up the next day and are like, I need to go to the hospital, the drugs are probably already out of your system. There's no signs of resisting because it takes away your power to resist. It takes away your power, a lot of these drugs, to speak. Some of these women reported being paralyzed, and it takes away your memory. So it's truly the perfect crime. And if the someone who is accused of doing it is someone powerful with a you know, pristine public image like Bill Cosby, who's going to believe you? So it was that. And the second was I had been digging into sexual misconduct among the ranks of the Pennsylvania State Police for the previous 2 years. And I had seen, you know, in that case with Michael Evans, you know, once one accuser came forward, then you know, more than 24 others did. And then by the time his civil case came to be, there were 30 accusers. None of them had gone to police prior to that. They were women who he chose carefully. He chose victims that he thought wouldn't be believed should they come forward. They were teenage runaways. They were women who were filing protection from abuse orders against their boyfriends or husbands, and he was the cop who responded in the hospital and sexually assaulted them at the hospital. So it was, in a lot of ways, those stories prepared me for this one. But still, you know, nothing prepared me for the backlash that I experienced.
Did you find that your studies of criminal justice for your master's actually helped you in your writing?
Yeah, and it helped me. I learned a lot. I mean, what I learned, you know, is that in journalism, we tend to have these knee-jerk reactions to crimes or horrific tragedies and go for the simple solutions. When, you know, oh, we ban guns, then it'll stop all this crime. When the reality is it's much more complicated than that. And that, you know, the law-abiding gun owners are not the ones we have to worry about. It's the ones with the illegal guns, and there's a hefty trade in that. So that's a lot of what I learned, that these are very complicated issues. A lot of this starts at home with the people and how they're raised and who is raising them and what kind of values and morals they're raised with. And a lot of it is about mental illness. So I learned a lot, definitely. But, you know, it made it harder to be a reporter in some ways because there aren't that many news organizations that, you know, want to tell those stories.
Sure. Sit tight. I have to take a commercial break, but we'll continue the conversation on the other side. We are talking to Nikki Wisensee Egan, and you are listening to Lifestyles here on WWDB.
Music, music. Now at the Ardmore Music Hall, a grand music venue in the heart of the Main Line. The venue is located at the legendary 23 East Lancaster Avenue in Ardmore, once known for its musical talent. Free parking nearby. For full information and tickets, see webpage at ardmoremusichall.com, ardmoremusichall.com, or call 610-649-8389. That's 610-649-8389. The webpage again, ardmoremusichall.com. It's a grand music venue in Ardmore in the heart of the Main Line.
I am Joe Ball. I started an advertising, PR, and communications firm over 60 years ago, still in business now. Over the years, I also added ownership and managing of several newspapers, consumer and trade shows, radio interview programs, and other businesses. They included a major football and basketball coaches conference at Notre Dame, an art school, and even a mediation company. I am still aiding medium and small businesses as a consultant. My knowledge, contacts, expertise can be helpful to area organizations. See our webpage, www.phillybizmedia.com. That's Philly Biz, like B-I-Z, media.com. Talk to me at 484-562-0063. 484-562-0063. I like to answer the phone. Phones still work. As do I.
Wildwood, a great place to vacation or have a family gathering or organization event. And now there's a deep, deep discount on reservations. Yes, huge savings on rooms at the well-known, beautiful Acropolis Oceanfront Resort on the beach, North Wildwood. Some restrictions do apply. Call the Acropolis Oceanfront Resort at 866-522-1515. That's 866-522-1515. 866-522-1515. 1515. Save big.
Welcome back to Lifestyles. D-Line, I'm with you, chatting with Nikki Wisensee Egan, author of Chasing Cosby, but I also, from the Philadelphia Daily News, you then went on to work at People. And one of your articles that I actually remember reading on a plane was Brittany Maynard's story, which got a lot of press, awards. Can you just share with people? Because it really is, to die with dignity is the whole premise of what she had to deal with as a 29-year-old, newly married, terminal brain tumor, and has to uproot her life to make a choice that seems so personal and her family's support. Did you meet the family?
Yeah, I met the family. I didn't meet her because we had to do those over the phone because she was living the last weeks of her life.
Yes.
And she was, like, I had been pitched the story by Compassion and Choices because I was working with them on some other things that didn't turn into stories. They kept pitching me stories. My editors kept turning them down. So then they came to me with this because they wanted it to go to a reporter they trusted because,
sure.
You know, you'll see the headlines today. People still call it assisted suicide. It's not suicide. If anything, it's assisted dying.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this person would choose to live were they not terminally ill. So they came to me on a Thursday, and the video was coming out that Monday. So I had to do a phone interview, and they were like, it's too late to get it in the magazine. We had to do it for online, and then it, you know, broke all these records online, and then we decided to do it for the magazine, but we needed also a photo shoot because we needed a current picture of her and her family and everything, and so she reluctantly agreed to give us like an hour on a Saturday afternoon, and they flew out there, but I couldn't also do my interviews in an hour, and the photos we needed, so... and I later did a follow-up story with her husband and her mother, and I met them then. But I didn't, unfortunately, get to meet her because she was really sticking to her schedule of spending her last days and weeks with her loved ones. And she was reluctant to give up any of that time for media, and she certainly didn't expect it to explode the way it did. And I, to this day, I think part of the reason is because I was able to get out of her what the date that she had a date in mind.
Yeah, November 1st, I remember.
Yeah, and it was
like after her husband's birthday, but before her 30th.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she was so thoughtful in everything that she wanted to do towards the end.
Yeah, and I had seen my grandmother died of a glioblastoma, and I saw how horrific a death it is. And she had, you know, Brittany said, you know, the doctors had told her because she's young and healthy, she could live trapped in her own body for months. And I actually, you know, have a former editor of mine at the Daily News who right now is dying of a glioblastoma, and it's exactly what's going on. He's been trapped in his own body for the last several months, unable to communicate, and he lost his ability to speak about a year ago. So she knew what the death was going to look like, and she didn't want to die like that. So she raised awareness. I mean, now, God, so many more states have passed laws since then. She just somehow knew. She was a very intelligent, very thoughtful person. So she just wanted to raise awareness. And she, like, I didn't know at that point there were states where you could do this yourself.
I didn't either.
I had relatives who were terminally ill in Oregon and the state of Washington, and I don't think they realized it before they died. So it was extraordinary what she did, but what she said made so much sense. And it's a choice, and it's totally up to you. And if you change your mind, you can change your mind. But it shouldn't be a choice that is taken away from you. You should have the right to make that choice.
Yeah, I think she even said, if I wake up on November 1st and it's a good day, I might postpone it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like, oh, my God. You know, it was just a really touching article. Anyhow.
Thank you.
I don't know if you...
Yeah, I want to do more on the right to die stuff.
Yeah, right? Like, how do you choose the things? I mean, sometimes you get to choose, but sometimes, as you say, things are pitched to you. Do you still, because now, do you freelance totally now?
Yeah, I'm totally freelance, but I haven't had time to freelance.
Right, because of your book.
I covered the second trial for Cosby for the Daily Beast. And then I got the book deal, and that took most of last year. Even though it was 2 months, there was a lot of, you know, editing back and forth. And then I recorded the audiobook, and then I got another book deal for a co-authoring with two people from California. It's kind of a similar case in a different way. It was called the Real Life Gone Girl.
Yeah, didn't know. I saw the title, but I don't know the story.
You'll probably remember it they were on 2020 a year ago. This is a woman who was kidnapped from her boyfriend's bed and raped and held hostage for 2 days, and when she was released, the cops accused it of being a hoax and said she had made up the whole thing. And they called it like the Real Life Gone Girl case. And then 3 months later, another cop caught this guy trying to do it again. And that's, and they found evidence that from what Denise had told them that, you know, he, this is what he did to me. And her boyfriend had corroborated her. He was at first viewed with suspicion as being, as having murdered her. And these are like two physical therapists with PhDs. These are reputable members of the community. They're just not anyone that you would think they would be remotely suspicious of. So yeah, that's my second one. And I do want to do some freelancing. I just haven't had time. And I'm working on some Cosby related projects that we haven't announced yet too.
Do you miss like working a beat, or meaning like for the paper or People when you were a senior writer there, correct?
Yeah. No, I don't at all, because the way the business has become, it's just it's 24/7. You never get a break,
and totally true.
It's rare that you get to really spend time on the stories that you care about. Everything's like now. I mean, these stories take time, and it took me months to track down the other Jane Does and get them to talk to me and agree to talk to me, and months of conversations. And, you know, with these type of stories, they take a lot of time and effort, and you can't turn them around quickly. And if you do, there's going to be a lot of mistakes in them. So I'd rather freelance. Plus, this whole business is about young and cheap now.
It is that.
That's what they want.
Nikki, why do you think people do trust you the way they have, whether it's the 12 Jane Does or even Brittany Maynard's family?
Because I think I have a lot of empathy for them, and I think they can tell when they meet you if you're a person who's sincere or not, and I am. Like, I really, the stories I choose to tell are ones I care deeply about. And, you know, I got the only interviews with Andrew Madoff, Bernie Madoff's son, before he died. You know, I've gotten a lot of exclusives through the years that people on those stories, and I actually had to fight against the perception about People because they just thought it was this celebrity magazine, which it is. So I think that I work really hard to meet them and gain their trust, and I spend time talking to them. I let them see other stories I've written, and I keep my promises to them. I've gone to battle with my editors to keep my promises to them. And my editors, I'm not saying ever like that, but I feel like they trusted me with their story. I'm going to fight for the integrity of that story.
I know you did teach at Temple, like magazine writing, and to differentiate between writing for a newspaper, which you also had done. What is the main difference in writing for a newspaper versus the magazine, in your opinion?
The writing, you know, I mean, when
style?
The style of the writing. Like, I remember when I was first writing my first People story, I was used to short, pithy little leads, like at the Daily News. And, you know, the leads there were like 18 to 20 lines long sometimes. And it made me, you know, the depth of reporting you have to do those stories too is very different. So that was probably the biggest, and the level of, you have to do, it's the writing, and you have to do an even deeper level of reporting than you do for regular stories.
So dig deeper, find more.
It's more about the writing and making it all flow together. You're telling a story. So it's really about the writing and trying to make everything flow together and tie together. The tough part of People was that I would get these interviews where I'd do files of like 40,000 word interviews, and I'd have to boil it down to 1,000 words. Even though it'd be a 4-page story, sure. They don't like long stories. The challenge would be like Brittany Menard's story, I think, was, if I was, I don't even know if it was 1,000 words, and it was 4 pages in the magazine and
really?
A cover story. Yeah.
Wow. All right, sit tight. I have to do one more commercial break, but we'll continue our conversation with Nikki Wise and C. Egan, and you are listening to Lifestyles.
Into rock and roll? Then visit Philadelphia's Hard Rock Cafe. Enjoy the huge menu and especially view the memorabilia. There's the legendary Jim Morrison jacket, acquired from Danny Sugarman, manager of the Doors. See the guitar that John Mayer created. He played with Eric Clapton. From Elton John, his Uncle Sam costume, also Shakira's leather pants. The list goes on. Memorabilia from Jimi Hendrix and Joan Jett. Lunch or dinner. Hard Rock Cafe, 12th and Market Streets, Philadelphia. It's an experience. Also hosting corporate events, social gatherings, bar mitzvahs. Hard Rock Cafe is cool. 12th and Market, 215-238-0639. 215-238-0639. 12th and Market Streets, Philadelphia.
Wildwood, a great place to vacation or have a family gathering or organization event. And now there's a deep, deep discount on reservations. Yes, huge savings on rooms at the well-known, beautiful Newport Beach Resort in front of the beach and boardwalk next to Subway Deli Wildwood. Some restrictions do apply. Call the Newport Motel at 800-831-3178. That's 800-831-3178. 800-831-3178. Plan early, save big.
Hello, my name is Sarah Walker, associate producer of this show. I'd like to read a message from one of our sponsors, Dr. Rick Wilson. It follows, quote, "Our dental practice is Richard Wilson, DMD, PC, Dental Arts and Sciences. We built upon more than 75 years of a dental practice that is unique, remarkable, and caring. Iconic Philadelphia dental educator, Dr. Morton Amsterdam, asserted, quote, "There may be many ways to treat a case, but there is only one correct diagnosis. We live this credo each and every day. We will always start with the correct diagnosis and fully explain it to our patients. We can be reached at 215-765-5281 and online at smilephiladelphian.com. That is smilephiladelphian.com.
My name is Joe Ball. I am 88 years old. I don't look that old, except in the mirror. I've been in business over 61 years, aiding small and medium-sized firms with their advertising and related needs. I'm still at it. Benefit. You can benefit from my lifetime experiences. Call me personally at 484-562-0060. That's 484-562-0060. Or see www.phillybizmedia.com. That's www.phillybizmedia.com. Make your contact soon, for obvious reasons. I'm 88 years old. 484-562-0060.
Need a speaker for your business meeting, organization, or group meetings? Need a speaker who is entertaining, inspiring, and informative? Need a speaker who is an authority on a subject close to your interest? We provide them. We are the Philadelphia Speakers Bureau. For speakers who serve your interests, call 484-562-0063. That's 484-562-0063. Again, 484-562-0063. ADCOMTIMES at AOL.com. Or write to us at adcomtimes at AOL.com. ADCOMTIMES at AOL.com. Adcomtimes.
Welcome back to Lifestyles. D-Line, I'm chatting with Nikki Wisensee Egan. Her book that is out currently is Chasing Cosby. Where can people get that book, Nikki?
You can go to my publisher's website, Seal Press, and look up my name, and all the places to get it are there. You can go to my website, NicoleWisenseeEgan.com, and I have links to everything. It's at your local bookstore. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. It's pretty much anywhere you can buy books. It's available. And if it's not there, you can ask them to get it.
And, Nikki, for people who just want an idea of the tone of what the book, because it's your reporting, but there's also kind of an analysis feel to it, too. I don't know if I'm saying that properly.
No, it's a very deep look at the whole scandal. It's applicable to all of the cases against powerful men who are being accused of sexual misconduct for decades. It shows how he was able to get away with it for so many years without being caught. It debunks rape myths. And it just is, it's a very deep look at the scandal. And I picked out the accusations to tell. I wanted to tell the 12 original Jane Does from 2005 who came forward, and Tamara Green. But I wanted to try to understand how this happened as well. And there were enablers. He had many enablers along the way, law enforcement, the media, his own people, that were really able to keep this scandal under wraps for many, many years. And if Andrea Constan had not passed on his offer of an educational trust, which Cosby offered after she went to police, I don't think we'd be having this conversation right now.
It's funny because I remember when he was convicted, I'm like, okay, this won't happen again. And now here we are, Jeffrey Epstein, who has, when you use the word enablers, I mean, to the nth degree. And I wonder, how will it ever end where people don't feel like they have power this great to do whatever and continue to get away with it?
Well, you know, it's so, I hate to point the finger at men, but really, like, powerful men protect other powerful men, or powerful people protect other powerful people. And when you have the heads of networks, when networks are run by corporations and so many news agencies are run by corporations, I mean, Bill Cosby, all he had to do was pick up the phone and he could get an interview with Dan Rather. You know, there was a lot of trading up, I learned that phrase in 2005, going on, where a news organization will back off on one story in order to get a better one. And Cosby's people had tried that with me at first because they said, oh, we've got to get you into these town halls, because this is when Cosby was going around the country lecturing black people about how to behave in inner cities. And you were only allowed as a reporter to come in if you were invited into them. And they said that to me at first. Yeah, we got to get you into one of these town halls. But then, of course, that offer went away the more aggressive my coverage got. And ABC, which was the only news agency that didn't cover Tamara Greene's accusations and only did like one story on the scandal. All of a sudden that May, they got the first print, the first interview with him. They were TV interview with him. They were at one of his town halls. It's crazy. And the National Enquirer, of course, ditched Beth Farrier's story to get the exclusive interview with him. So they, you know, when they are powerful like that and, you know, revered, and they're especially celebrities, you know, a lot of the journalists came out and did mea culpas even in 2014, including Ronan Farrow, because a book had just come out about him that did not mention the scandal. There had been several interviews with him by many in the media that did not mention the scandal. Ta-Nehisi Coates,
yep,
was another one who did a mea culpa. He'd done this huge piece on him for The Atlantic, barely mentioned the sexual assault allegations. And then David Carr from The New York Times called everyone out, including himself, and said, you know, we should have done this. And Ronan Farrow, a few months later, did a column saying the same thing, because he was told by NBC not to ask Cosby about it. And so he like squeaked in one question at the end of the interview. So, but they have the power to say, all right, you know, even their reps, all right, if you do this, then you're never going to talk to this celebrity again. My other clients.
Right, right. Wow, what a scam. Continued success. I'll look forward to your next book. And thank you so much for stopping by. It was fun chatting with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Our guest has been Nikki Wisensee Egan, and you've been listening to Lifestyles. Today's show has been sponsored by American Advertising Services, Philadelphia's longest established advertising and publicity firm. For creative ideas that can help your company, give our friend Joe Ball a call at 484-562-0063. That number again, 484-562-0063. Until next time, I am Dee Lynam. Have a great day.